Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and thank you for joining me on our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, the Church and the AIDS pandemic. Catholic organizations from around the world come together to coordinate their work and step up the campaign to make life-saving drugs available to all. Hear how the Church is helping combat the disease in Africa, China, and Papua New Guinea. Welcome to the program. It's one of the best-kept secrets in the Church today, the amount of work being done in countries across the world to help communities devastated by the AIDS pandemic. Whereas the media focuses almost exclusively on the conflict between church and secular organizations trying to prevent the spread of the deadly HIV virus, far away from the spotlight, Catholic and other faith-based groups continue to provide life-saving treatment, care and education programs in towns, villages and the remotest rural areas. But it's not always an easy task, and there are still many difficulties in coordinating and overcoming the stigma and discrimination that surround this disease.
We're still finding too many cases where priests are refusing to give people communion that they've HIV, cases where if a priest has HIV, he's sent away by his bishop in shame and so on. There are too many cases of this kind of discrimination. And the best thing is really to go back to what the late Pope said about it and how there can be no discrimination in Christianity for anyone.
Duncan McLaren is Secretary General of the Global Catholic Aid and Development Network, Caritas Internationalis, which has been at the forefront of the Church's response to AIDS for the past two decades. His organisation recently brought together in Geneva Catholic experts from around the world, top UN officials and other organisations engaged in the fight against this disease.
We're now seeing the devastating effects of HIV/AIDS, which after all cut a huge swathe out of an economically active generation in large parts of Africa, for example, that's now having an effect on the economies. I mean, there are now major famines in countries even like Kenya, where it's not normal. And part of the reason is, of course, that the economically active people and families have been cut down by HIV/AIDS. The number of orphans is now reaching 22 million throughout the world. Two-thirds of the people affected are in Africa. And so there's actually a connection between what we're seeing as famine in Africa and HIV/AIDS. And that's just one example of the new phase that we're entering. However, there's a positive aspect to the new phase as well, which is that the antiretroviral drugs that are available are helping people to live much longer than the span that they were given before, and to live comfortably and even be economically active and can care for their own families rather than the families care for them. And one of the aspects of that, however, is the lack of distributive justice, in that in the United States, where they spend around about $30,000 a year per person who lives with the virus, in Kenya it's less than $1. So we are looking at a lack of distributive justice, and that's one of the issues that we want to address, particularly in our advocacy work for people living with the virus.
Duncan McLaren there, Secretary General of Caritas Internationalis. The main aim of the Geneva conference was to discuss ways of better coordinating Catholic AIDS work and of cooperating more closely with other major funding agencies like UNAIDS, the Global Fund, the World Bank, the World Health Organization, and the International Labour Organization, which hosted the talks. The meeting opened with a message from the Holy See's representative to the UN in Geneva, who spoke of the need for churches to scale up their response to the AIDS crisis and work together with other organisations without compromising their core Catholic identity and values, a challenge facing all those engaged in combating the pandemic.
We are glad to hear it said every now and again, even by people in government, that our church is doing a lot of work in this regard. But much more encouraging is when we hear the people themselves testifying to the fact that the Catholic Church has helped them a lot. And I mean, people living with HIV/AIDS, irrespective of their faith belonging.
Nigerian Archbishop John Onaiyekin is president of SICAM, the Symposium of African Bishops' Conferences. I asked him whether the church in his native country has been able to cooperate with the government on this critical issue.
Yes, we have tried to. We have certainly made it clear to government that our hands are out for a partnership with them. But you see, one of the problems we have in Nigeria is that it is not always easy to work with government agencies. But besides that, the resources don't come too much from government. We thought that the government could put more money into the HIV/AIDS and put more into the hands of groups like ours that are actually doing the work. But I must say, compared to other areas, our collaboration with government has been appreciable in this area of HIV/AIDS. If I take the example of my own city of Abuja and the Federal Capital Territory, the local government agency for fight against HIV/AIDS regularly invites us to meetings of strategizing, and every now and again they disburse through us assistance for the people living with HIV/AIDS. But I think it could be better.
What about cooperation with other faith leaders there in Nigeria? You're something of a pioneer, aren't you, in working together with the Muslim community in your country. Have you been able to work together on this in particular?
There has been a deliberate effort on our part to work with other religious organizations. But sometimes working together is not as good as we would want.
Do you think there's a greater need then for coordination within the Catholic Church and indeed with other faith-based groups then?
Well, within the Catholic Church there is a good coordination. We meet regularly. Every diocese has a HIV/AIDS unit, and the dioceses are linked together on the provincial as well as on the national level. And we have a national office for this with about two or three doctors who are, trained medical personnel with a whole complement of staff, precisely to improve our coordination, mutual exchange of experiences, and very often to represent Nigeria when we have to go beyond outside our shores for advocacy work or general discussion on HIV/AIDS. They also, the national group, are supposed to be responsible for our link with the federal government and the national HIV/AIDS unit. So the within our church is going, in my own opinion, very well. It is less successful when it comes to working together with other Christian bodies. This is largely too because we are all organized in different ways, and it is not easy to work together when we do not have similar ways of doing things.
Looking at the broader picture there in Africa, some countries like, for example, Uganda or Kenya have been able to significantly slow the spread of the HIV virus. Why is this, and what do you think is the lesson that can be learnt there for other countries?
Well, we have heard very much about the Uganda story, and every time I meet people from Uganda, I've always been interested to find out what exactly happened in your place. But what we have found is that for whatever reason, at some point in Uganda, the issue of AIDS became unavoidable, and the government too put all its resources behind moving the discussion of fighting against HIV/AIDS, and all those who are interested in doing something were encouraged by government. The result is that the church and our own specific contribution of fight against HIV is either in terms of prevention by promoting behavior change, whether both among the youths and also among the adults, and our efforts at at care of people already infected and so on. The church in Uganda had full access to whatever resources were available, both from the government of Uganda and also from the foreign funding that is going to most of the African countries. I have the feeling that this is not the situation in many other countries. There is a divide, there is sometimes even an attitude of hostility on the part of government to church agencies for whatever reason. Sometimes simply the church is kept out of the what government is doing. Sometimes too, there are governments, I'm afraid, who don't want to deal with an organization like the church that is and will not be amenable to corrupt practices. These are all, unfortunately, the realities with which we have to deal. Now, there is, of course, the fact, too, that in some places there are conflicting messages about how to address the issue of HIV/AIDS. If you are in a nation where the government does not believe there is HIV/AIDS, it's difficult to see how far you can go. Or if you go to a place where the whole country is flooded with cartons of condoms and the only preoccupation is how to distribute condoms, then of course you will not go too far. And I think this is where Uganda was different. I hope other countries will learn. May I say, in my own country, Nigeria, I am happy to note that in the last four or five years, there have been, according to our own estimation, an appreciable improvement in the quality of the messages which the government is pushing on HIV/AIDS. We have beautiful posters all over the place encouraging abstinence and fidelity, and done in very, very creative way. There are still a few jingles that are pushing condoms, but the people are not faced only with that kind of message. I believe that it is working.
Finally then, what would be your message to other countries? We know that Africa has been the hardest hit so far by the AIDS crisis, but now other Asian countries particularly are seeing huge increases. What is your message to leaders in those other countries that are facing the same kind of crisis?
I think if Africa is hardest hit by HIV/AIDS, we know to add Africa is hardest hit by malaria. Africa is hardest hit by all kinds of disease. And the reason is simply that Africa is hardest hit by poverty. Poverty and bad government. So if we do not find a way out of that, shall I say, original sin of poverty and bad government, we can do whatever we like and we can make as much effort as we can, disburse as much fund as we can, we will only be scratching the surface. So we are only praying that all across the board in our nations, we will begin to think seriously of how to run our affairs in a more rational way. Everybody agrees that after our 40 years of independence, most countries are not where we thought we would be. And this is where the political discussion becomes extremely relevant. If we can start moving in the right direction of better governance of ourselves, it will improve our economic situation and HIV/AIDS will be manageable.
Yeah, I mean, poverty is one of the causes, I would say, which contributes to the rapid spread of HIV.
Sister Tarcisia Hunhoff is Secretary of the Health Commission for the Catholic Bishops of Papua New Guinea and the Solomon Islands.
Papua New Guinea had its first AIDS case in 1987, and for the first years there was not much done about it. And by the time of 1995, something like that, it was out of control. And so we have a escalating epidemic in the country, generalized epidemic now.
What in terms of numbers, do you have any ideas?
The statistics say we have 12,000 confirmed HIV/AIDS cases. However, this is not the reality, because from the at ground level, we see so many people dying. But because of the lack of counseling and care centers, and testing centers, we don't really know the real extent. We only see on the ground what's happening.
So what kind of response has the church been able to provide, if any? You're saying it was a very slow response.
Yeah, the government was slow, and so also the church, I guess, in the beginning. However, the last few years, we are very active now. Working with Caritas Australia, we have set up in each diocese a full-time office with a coordinator. And in the last 18 months, we have built and opened 12 VCT centers across the country, where we have trained counselors and caregivers. And we do a lot of training of our nurses, midwives, and we also have started with the PMCT program, Born to Live, that we try to prevent the virus spreading from the mother to the baby. And we have our first successes now. After 18 months, we have children who are now negative, testing negative.
So a certain amount of success. What about in programs of education in terms of prevention?
Yes, we do. We have programs in all our schools, especially in the high schools, senior schools, and universities. We are doing a lot of work in the area of prevention. Of course, for the church, we stress abstinence and faithfulness in marriage. But there is also sometimes the issue of the condom, and the church gets attacked a lot, I would say, from overseas donors, and it's sometimes not easy to stand our ground.
Do you find it difficult then to work to coordinate with other organizations, whether foreign donors or governmental organizations?
Yeah, it is difficult sometimes because the church's teaching we try to adhere to. But also the government and the foreign donors cannot do without the Catholic Church in Papua New Guinea, because we have such a wide network in place. And since we are so involved the last 2-3 years, they realize that they cannot do without us. So if they want to move forward, they will have to take us in.
What about the availability of drugs for people who are already living with HIV? What kind of availability is there at the moment?
The Papua New Guinea has been just now, last year, the recipient of the Global Fund money. And under the Global Fund money, there is funds allocated for antiretroviral therapy. We have started with antiretroviral therapy in the capital, Port Moresby. And now, slowly, we're starting to move out into the provinces. So antiretroviral therapy, I would hope it would be provided under the Global Fund money for people. However, it is slow to... The progress is actually very slow. And it seems that the system also is not able to cope with the huge big numbers of people to enroll into antiretroviral therapy. Healthcare is poor in Papua New Guinea, so there is a lot desired, I would say, to really scale up antiretroviral therapy.
What about the question of stigma and discrimination of those living with HIV in Papua? What is that like at the moment?
Yeah, it is present, definitely. But I would say that we have made progress in that area. When I look back some 10 years ago, when the first people came back from the city into their home places in the rural areas, and people realized that they were HIV positive, I know some cases where the women especially were just put in their huts and kerosene put on top and the whole house lit up and they burned them alive, I would say. And also they would throw them in the big river where there was no escape. So this drastic measures and stigma we don't have anymore. But stigma is definitely present and is one of the big barriers for people not coming out and seeking help.
It's still seen as a disease which occurs among, in quotes, bad people. And this is a very definite growing edge in China.
Father Scott Harris works in Hong Kong, where he runs the Maryknoll China Service project. He told me, despite the difficulties the church faces there, there's a high level of cooperation between the communist government and organizations like his own.
Well, first of all, the AIDS plan for China, written by Chinese, is excellent. So all partners can take part of the responsibility in connection with the government and do a great deal. One of the activities we've been involved in is the training of nurses in four university settings, especially those that work with those who have sexually transmitted diseases and also those that are involved with maternal child health. And the outreach to the nurses has been very successful, and they, who in turn have been trained, and they are carrying the ball forward, because you see, in China, there are 1,300,000 nurses. So the task of training up any group is really very, very large.
You're saying that there's a very successful AIDS plan that has been drawn up, but isn't it also true to say that for a long time the Chinese leadership actually denied the existence of a problem? It was seen as a Western disease, wasn't it?
Yes, initially there were slow starts, but there's not any slowness about the response now. China has become very, very practical about how much harm this disease could do to the development of the country and the revolution.
Now, the church, of course, the Catholic Church there is a minority with limited resources and limitations on its activities. But actually, you're saying that there is a good working relationship between church and government, between the different actors here.
The role of the church as being involved in social activities is one that's evolving. According to Chinese law, it is the exclusive responsibility and right of the government to provide all information and medical care and be involved in education. So the government allowing the church or any NGO or any group to participate in this is something which is evolving as well. The condition of the church in China is that it's got a large number of well-trained and educated young clergy who are interested in service not only to the Catholic community, but to the wider community of Chinese people. And I would say this is the group of New China that will move things forward in terms of the church relating more successfully and efficiently to the state.
And so how easy is it? I mean, China is such a huge country. How easy is it to, for example, share information, to share experiences, to be able to cooperate in different centers around the country working on this issue?
It's a challenge because of all those things you just said. China is enormous, and every province has its own character and is different. The view of the way things are in Beijing is by nature national, but of course implementation of programs is always provincial, and therefore trying to design programs that are successful at the base, which I think is where the church needs to be serving, takes some thought. And every program I must be connected with national initiatives, otherwise it's doomed to fail after the particular program is over. There must be linkage because of the difficulties of working in so large and so populated a country. I find China does this very well, by the way. Dissemination of information, what succeeds in one province gets to be known all around. And in our nursing program, we have been asked to consider going to the five most affected provinces with HIV and doing saturation training of nurses and some other medical personnel. Now, the way that happened is because of the activities of people we already trained, not just the church. This training was inspired by the Chinese Nurses Association and a consortium involving WHO, Maryknoll, my own community, University of Illinois Chicago, the four nursing schools. All of that group thinking out how can we train trainers and make this have a ripple effect of its own.
What is the attitude, would you say, of people in China? How willing are they to come forward for testing, for example?
There's a great deal of stigma. The amount of exclusion of those who are HIV positive is rather excruciating. There are that initial group that were they made positive by blood transfusions, etc. And then there are also the others, the new cases that are largely through use of IV drugs. So you've got various groups and various ideas of whether these people are moral or immoral, and therefore acceptance of maybe one group more than another, but genuine difficulty with anyone that has this disease.
It must be very frustrating often doing the work that you're doing. What is it that gives you the most hope at the moment?
I was in Africa in the early 1980s working in East Africa, and the Africans taught me a lot about how to deal with this. I'm seeing some similarities and some very striking differences in China. What is most different about this second round, at least for me, is that now best practices are known from around the world. Thailand, the Netherlands, Germany, many of the places with successful programs, Uganda included. So China is having this program precisely at a time when it can pick and choose from what is known to work. And China and the Chinese are very practical people. They do want to look around and see what can be applied and used from abroad with, of course, Chinese characteristics. And my great hope is that, and my enthusiasm for my work comes from the fact that there are many very educated and enthusiastic Chinese who are willing to engage in this work.
And this is going to alter, isn't it, as you were saying earlier, the relationship perhaps between the church and the government in China?
Well, yes, I guess I must say that all internal discord or change or revolutions in China were accompanied by a spiritual component. And therefore, Chinese historians and people treat religions very, very carefully and understandably so that as the progress of this interrelationship occurs, there's a kind of a mutual evaluation of how this is going. China is growing, changing so fast, and the expectations of the population for services are increasing, as well as the graying of China, a huge, enormous number of old people with maybe not anyone to care for them. There are all these things happen simultaneously, so the many Chinese who have been abroad have seen that the church and other NGOs can be very helpful taking their part in doing this service. And I'm hopeful that AIDS will be a proving ground where the church will be seen as a trustworthy partner for the development of the people and the service of those in need.
Marian Old Father Scott Harris, Sister Tarsisia Hunhoff from Papua New Guinea, and Nigerian Archbishop John Onaiyekin were all participants in a recent Caritas-sponsored meeting of Catholic organizations involved in HIV/AIDS ministry. And that's all from us here at the English Programme for today. Don't forget you can always find our programmes on the internet at 105live.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.